different system, and they don't want to be enslaved by this regime for its ideological purposes. They want freedom, as it was a slogan in 2022. Woman, life, freedom. They want equal rights for everyone, including women, and they want freedom. And I think it is a kind of injustice to say that this time the regime is acting this way because of the threats of the United States or Israel, because it overlooks the agency of the Iranian people on the ground. You must remember that going on the streets in front of the bullets is not something that happens when a foreign country sends a message or encourages people to do. People in Iran really want freedom and the same values that Western democracies stand for. And they are expecting support because the values that they are fighting for are the same values that are held dear in the United States and Western Europe. So I don't think that the regime is killing people more just because President Trump is supporting or Prime Minister Netanyahu is supporting them. The foreign affairs are influential, maybe, but it is the people on the ground that they are chanting what they want, and we shouldn't ignore what they are chanting for. The U.S. sanctions have certainly affected Iranian economy, but the mismanagement of all the resources that we had in Iran, the money that they got from oil, they used all that money to make missiles and to export those missiles to their proxies. So yeah, there was enough money to make Iran from the ground up again, but they chose to spend that money on their ideological wars. So we should also give agency to the regime itself and not say that it is because of the policies of the United States or any other country. They are responsible for ruining Iran, and people in Iran are really tired of it.
And Professor Bajugli, your final comment in this last 30 seconds.
Iranians have been struggling for their freedom for close to over 40 years now. They definitely want a different system. And they know very well what they are up against, and they are extremely brave in how they go up for the changes that they seek. The Islamic Republic is and has always responded extremely repressively towards uprisings in Iran. But it is a fact that the more that the United States and Israel make these kinds of claims of intervention and having agents on the ground, it only continues to up the ante, and it completely erases a lot of the very legitimate grievances and demands that Iranians on the ground have. And it just escalates this entire thing into a geopolitical war instead of continuing to listen to what those folks on the ground are demanding.
Johns Hopkins University professor Narges Bajoogli teaches anthropology and Middle East studies. Co-author of How Sanctions Work, Iran and the Impact of Economic Warfare, speaking to us from Washington, D.C., and Hamidreza Mohammadi, brother of the Nobel Peace Laureate Narges Mohammadi, who once again was imprisoned last month. He works closely with the Narges Foundation, speaking to us from Oslo, Norway. Up next, over 1,000 protests against ICE across the country following the killing of Rene Good in Minneapolis. We'll go there. Stay with us.
Thank you. برای توی کوچه رخصیدن، برای ترسیدن به وقت بوسیدن، برای خواهرم، خواهرت، خواهرامون، برای تغییر مغزها که پوسیدن، برای شرمندگی، برای بیپولی، برای حسرت یک زندگی معمولی، برای کودک زبال گرد و آرزوهاش، برای این اقتصاد دستوری، برای این هوای آلوده، برای ولیعصر و درختای فرسوده، برای پیروز و احتمال انقراضش، برای سگهای بیگناه ممنوعه، برای گریه های بی وقفه، برای تصویر تکرار این لحظه، برای چهره ای که میخنده، برای دانش آموزا، برای آینده، برای این بهشت اجباری، برای نخبه های زندانی، برای کودکان افغانی، برای این همه برای غیر تکراری، برای این همه شعارهای تو
خواهی because of by the Iranian singer Shirvan Hajipour. It became the unofficial anthem of the 2022 Iran protests after the death of Mahsa Amini, severely beaten by police for breaking a hijab law. Hajipour was arrested 2 days after the song was originally published. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Newly released footage shows Renee Good, the 37-year-old mother of three, shot dead by an ICE agent in Minneapolis last week, calmly told the agent, quote, "I'm not mad at you," right before he shot her. In footage ICE claims was recorded by ICE agent Jonathan Ross on his cell phone, Good is seen sitting in her car as Ross circles around her vehicle in the middle of the road. Good's wife, Becca, also speaks to Ross in the roughly 40-second encounter. The video begins shortly before Ross fired his gun while also recording on his phone and continues for a few minutes afterwards.
U.S. citizen, you want to come at us? You want to come at us? I say go get yourself some lunch, big boy.
Go ahead. Get out of the car. Get out of the car. Get out of the car. Whoa!
Bitch. After ICE agent Jonathan Ross shot Renee Good, a male voice, possibly Ross's, is heard in the video saying, "effing bitch." The Minnesota Star Tribune reports Ross is a firearms instructor who appears to have defended white supremacists online. He was deployed to Iraq in 2004 and 5 before joining Border Patrol and then ICE. His family and friends reportedly describe him as a hardcore conservative Christian and MAGA supporter. This comes as Renee Good's wife, Becca, released her first statement following the fatal shooting, saying, quote, "Renee was a Christian who knew that all religions teach the same essential truth. We're here to love each other, care for each other, and keep each other safe and whole." About their encounter with ICE agents, she said, quote, "we had whistles, they had guns," unquote. Meanwhile, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has doubled down on allegations Good was engaged in domestic terrorism. She spoke here on CNN.
She weaponized her vehicle to conduct an act of violence against a law enforcement officer and the public.
As protests continue in Minneapolis over Good's killing, tens of thousands of people took to the streets nationwide, led by the ICE Out for Good campaign from Los Angeles to New York.
What happened there completely inexcusable. And what makes it even worse is the administration's reaction to it, from Kristi Noem, President Trump, Vice President Vance, all of them slandering her as a domestic terrorist. And if they can call her a domestic terrorist, then we're all domestic terrorists, you know?
For more, we go to Minneapolis to speak with civil rights attorney and activist Nakima Levy Armstrong, as hundreds more federal agents are expected to deploy this week to Minneapolis. Nakima, thanks for joining us again on Democracy Now! We spoke to you after the George Floyd police murder 5 years ago, and now here you are back again. If you can respond to what Kristi Noem is saying. She immediately has come to a conclusion about what happened, and they are preventing, saying that they will not cooperate with state and local authorities in Minnesota to investigate what took place. The state and the city of Minneapolis are pushing back. We spoke to Attorney General Keith Ellison, the Minnesota Attorney General. Explain what's happening right now.
Well, number one, we know that DHS Secretary Kristi Noem is not only lying, she's rushing to judgment. Amy, as you know, anytime there's a police shooting and there are witnesses and we see what happens on video, we're told, pipe down, wait for the evidence all to come forward, the investigation to be complete before drawing any conclusions regarding the outcome. And here in this instance, we're seeing the exact opposite take place, but this time at the hands of the federal government, who has already labeled the victim falsely as a domestic terrorist. We heard from so-called President Donald Trump claiming that Renee Good tried to run the ICE agent over with her vehicle, which, again, is false. We heard J.D. Vance, the vice president of the United States, claiming that federal agents have complete immunity, which is a lie. And so those folks at the highest levels of government are perpetuating falsehoods, narratives that are nonsensical, and working overtime to justify the brutal murder of Renee Good, a mother of three, which is unconscionable and unacceptable. And so the people of the state of Minnesota, as well, of course, as the city of Minneapolis, have consistently taken to the streets to call for justice for Renee Good. As a matter of fact, the day after Renee Good was killed, the FBI made it clear that they were disinviting the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which is one of our state agencies primarily responsible for investigating the use of deadly force in the state of Minnesota. They said that they could no longer participate in the investigation, that they would not share evidence. And so after that happened, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension essentially said, hey, there's nothing we can do. And there was silence on the part of a lot of our elected officials, many of whom are Democratic in terms of running the city of Minneapolis, as well as our governor, Tim Walz, who was a Democrat. They were largely silent after that. But we, the people, actually made the decision to go out and educate the public. We held an emergency press conference, and we called upon local elected officials to take matters into their own hands by taking control of the investigation. We said, under the law, you are able to charge and arrest Jonathan Ross for the murder of Renee Good. We've all seen the videos. We know that there are plenty of witnesses. That should be sufficient evidence to demonstrate probable cause for the arrest of Jonathan Ross. And I'm saying this in contrast to what happens if, let's say, a young Black man commits a crime. Imagine a young Black man standing in front of a person's vehicle and opening fire and shooting them in the head. That person would have been arrested immediately. So there should not be a double standard for law enforcement, particularly when it comes to ICE agents who are acting with a reckless disregard for human life, and they are also violating the law, but they are not being held accountable.
I'm wondering, Nikema Levy-Armstrong, if you have a comment on your local home paper, Minnesota Star Tribune, reporting Jonathan Ross, a firearms instructor, appears to have defended white supremacists online, deployed to Iraq in 2004 and 5 before joining Border Patrol and ICE. Friends and family describe him as a hardcore conservative Christian and MAGA supporter. His sister took him on in a Facebook post, but saying, I love you, Jonathan, you're my brother, but I'm not going to have this fight on Facebook. Your response?
Well, I'm glad that the Star Tribune is doing its part in reporting the truth. As a matter of fact, one of the demands that we made when we held our press conference was for the release of the name of the ICE agent to come forward. And the Star Tribune was actually the paper that was the first to release Jonathan Ross's name. And that's how we found out that he is actually a resident of the state of Minnesota. He is also married to a Filipino immigrant. And so there are so many contradictions, you know, with regard to his background. The fact that he would be married to an immigrant and harbor such hateful views, and the way in which he treated Renee Good, from my perspective, demonstrated hate towards women. The fact that you can look at a defenseless woman who is essentially unarmed, has a smile on her face, is kind in the way that she's speaking to him, and for him to be able to see her as a threat, it's unconscionable to me. But again, what we have to realize is that the federal government is essentially unleashing ICE agents, of course, in cities across America, particularly democratically run cities, which I believe is intentional. And with regard to what is happening in Minnesota, the largest deployment of ICE agents in U.S. history, it's not a coincidence that this is happening. And we believe in retaliation for our governor running to become the vice president of the United States and taking on Donald Trump and MAGA and, you know, speaking the truth around the issues that are happening. And in response to that, what's going on? We're seeing retaliation. We're seeing hellhounds being unleashed in the city of Minneapolis and claiming to have federal authority to do the things that they're doing, dragging people out of their cars, busting down people's doors, kicking in people's doors, showing up at local Target stores and arresting employees. It's outrageous. The churches aren't safe. The schools aren't safe. As a matter of fact, Minneapolis Public Schools shut down schools on Thursday and Friday after an attack by ICE agents where they were seen physically abusing children, apprehending one or two staff members, as well as pepper spraying children.
That
getting
was,
out of
course,
school, high school students at Roosevelt High School.
That's right. Nikema Levy-Armstrong, I want to thank you for being with us, civil rights attorney, founder of the Racial Justice Network. Of course, we're going to continue to cover this. And over the weekend, three lawmakers in Minnesota, Congress members Angie Craig, Kelly Morrison, Ilhan Omar, visited regional ICE headquarters near Minneapolis, but were denied access, even though federal law prohibits DHS from blocking Congress members entering their sites. But last week, the Trump administration reinstated limits that require lawmakers to provide 7-day notice before visits. We'll cover the story this week each day. Next up, All the Walls Came Down, a new documentary by filmmaker Andy Timiner on last year's devastating fires in Los Angeles that destroyed her home and left her beloved town of Altadena in ruins. We'll also speak with the Altadena community leader, Heavenly Hughes. Stay with us.
Never knew you from around. Then all the walls came down. Didn't know your face in the crowd. Smoke and ash away.
Came Down, performed by Chantal Kravyatsuk and written by Chantal and Morgan Doctor. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show continuing our look back at last year's devastating fires in Los Angeles. 1 year ago, the historic Palisades Fire and Eaton Fire ripped through the region. More than 30 people died, over 100,000 displaced, some 16,000 buildings and homes were destroyed. We turn now to the short documentary, All the Walls Came Down, directed by filmmaker Andy Timoner. The fires destroyed her home and left her beloved town of Altadena and its historically Black neighborhood in ruins. The film follows Altadena community activist Heavenly Hughes. It's been shortlisted for an Oscar. This is the trailer.
Here it is.
Wow.
It says unsafe. It says it right there. You see it?
This is how we have to go home now. We're home in a hazmat outfit.
There's no home here.
We got married right here.
Amen. It's beyond belief.
Yeah.
I don't know if we could live here. Morgan really doesn't want to live here. But I also don't want to abandon my community. I mean, Altadena is my community, so I don't know what to do. What would you do?
We were actually trapped and had to break through my glass doors to even get out the house.
Welcome home, Andy. Randy's my across-the-street neighbor.
I said, there's no way the fire was going to make it all the way to our house.
That's downtown Altadena.
And it did. This was our family legacy.
You moved into a Black community where we are not on the priority list to save our lives. They've been wanting to get us out of there for a very long time.
Sleeping at the park because we are unhoused.
What's happening with the house?
They're saying that they're going to do foreclosures.
What?
Yeah.
I come back here just to remember how to get here and just to know the way back home.
That's my bedroom wall right there. My safest space in the world.
Altadena, this is the largest debris mission in the 250 years that the Corps of Engineers and the Army has been in existence. And I have 100% confidence that it will rise up again.
The trailer for All the Walls Came Down. Let's go to another clip featuring community activist Heavenly Hughes, founder of the group My Tribe Rise.
Despite living next to each other, exchanging occasional hellos and waves from a distance, it's only after the walls came down and my neighbors and I are displaced and dispersed that our bonds of connection truly form.
We have luncheons where we invite Altadenians throughout the community who's been impacted by the fire. We call them our power luncheons.
Hello, how are you? Blessings. Good to see you. We're going to talk.
Our last luncheon, I saw probably 20 of my classmates that I graduated from high school with. They come up to me like, thank you so much. It feels good to be able to serve them.
Altadena is actually not a city of its own. It's unincorporated L.A. County. So we only have county services, like the county fire and sheriff. And Catherine Barger is our only local politician.
How many of us in here are planning to rebuild? Because we want to keep you encouraged. We want to keep you encouraged that we are going to rebuild. There will be a new Altadena, and we're going to all be a part of it. Blessings.
A clip from the Oscar shortlisted film, All the Walls Came Down. You can watch the whole thing on the Los Angeles Times website. We're joined now by that community activist in Altadena, Heavenly Hughes, and the film's award-winning director, Andy Timoner, who lost her home in the fire. I mean, let's be clear on what Altadena represents in this country. The second largest percentage of Black home ownership in the country. Over 9,000 structures burnt down, more than 6,000 of them homes. Heavenly, if you can talk about the people who've lost their homes. 60% of the homes were owned by Black families.
Yes, well, 60% of ownership within the Black community was homeowners. Thank you so much, of course, for having us here. We truly appreciate. We appreciate keeping the message out about what has happened in Altadena. This catastrophe has been a hardship that we are still struggling to overcome. So, yes, this is a Black community where we were built. This community of Altadena through redlining. We all came together in Westside Altadena, and we feel like we're being forced out because of this fire and not really getting the support that we need from our elected officials to be sure to preserve and protect our Black and brown community.
So what's happening? I mean, the homes have burnt down.
Right.
And talk about who has claimed responsibility. Actually, let's put that question to Andy. The electric
we found very quickly after the fire that Southern California Edison actually started the fire. They didn't turn the power off, even though the Palisades and Malibu fire was raging all day with 80, 90 mile an hour winds. And they just couldn't charge us if they didn't keep the power on, right? So they penny wise, pound foolish, and they just kept it on. And they had a dead line that was supposed to be dormant for years that they were supposed to take down that they didn't take down. And it was activated by colliding with a live wire, and the brush that they had not cleaned ignited. And many people caught it on their cameras. They've accepted responsibility, but they won't pay until next year. So we have to get families. We have over 61% of Altadena families are going to face a housing crisis in the next 2 months. They're going to lose their homes because they've run out of...
The petition you have, I saw a screening of this yesterday.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It says...
Yeah, so the petition is to stop the foreclosures, put a moratorium on the foreclosures. Governor Newsom and the legislature can do that so that Black and brown families are not pushed off their land while waiting for the for the power company to pay.
How can they possibly be foreclosed on? And who's buying up the properties if they are? And, of course, if it's foreclosed on, they won't be bought from the owners.
Well, it's predatory behavior happening now. I call them vultures. It is the developers who are coming and buying up the land. We're going through a hardship, so they're offering money to say, you know, we can get you out of this hardship, take out of this heaviness. It's hard to navigate what to do right now. So many moving pieces, and so developers are coming in offering money, and really our community members are not as informed to understand that they're offering pennies on the dollar of what this land is worth. And so that's
who people have insurance.
A lot of people were dropped on Westside Altadena 4 months before the fire. Many homes, they were dropped. You know, there's State Farm and other insurance company. To me, they also are predatory of what's going on because they are not paying. Some folks have been paying insurance premiums for 20, 30, 40, even 50 years. And now when it's time to pay out, they're not doing it. They're not paying out. They're making people pay first and reimburse. And how are we, if you lost everything, where are you coming up with the money to pay first when you've been paying these premiums for years? So this is also a hardship.
We're going to do a part two of this discussion, but what do you think is the most important takeaway? Andy, you were making a film. You got a message from your cross the street neighbor. Your house has burned down.
Yeah, I was in Europe at the time, and I just thought, I have lost everything. But if I don't film right now, there'd be no way to transform this experience into something meaningful if there's a meaning to be found. And I found that silver lining with the community. The community has come together out of this, and we stand together and demand that Southern California Edison bridge families over so that they're not pushed off their generational
land. They have an emergency fund of billions of dollars?
Billions of dollars, and they just need to advance money now, and that's part of our petition as well. So this is really something that, you know, it's I made the film extremely fast because it's an emergency response. It's an urgent situation in our town.
We're going to continue this discussion and post it online at democracynow.org. I want to thank you, Andy Timoner, director of All the Walls Came Down. The film, shortlisted for an Oscar, features Heavenly Hughes, who founded My Tribe Rise. That does it for the show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station, broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Ducks Unlimited Canada works with landowners and other conservation-minded partners to improve outcomes for communities and wildlife. Supporting vital ecosystems which contribute to water quality and quantity, soil health, support agriculture and economy, mitigate severe weather events, and provide opportunities for recreational access to nature. Together, we are unlimited. Learn more about programs and partnerships at ducks.ca.